This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
This is Steve Downes, the voice of Master Chief, Sierra 117, and you're listening to Podcast Unlocked, the world's number one Xbox podcast. Now, finish this fight. Master Chief, out.
What's happening, friends? I'm Ryan McCaffrey. Welcome to Podcast Unlocked. It's IGN's weekly Xbox show. This is episode 637. It's March 20th, 2024, as we sit down to record this. And by we, I mean me and my good friend, Destin Legarry. Hi, Destin.
Bam. Hey, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You're always here. You don't have to thank me. It's just how this is how it is.
I'm always grateful when I get to come back for the next episode.
But you think you're on like a week-to-week contract with this thing?
Yeah,
like you could be kicked to the curb at any moment.
Any day now. They tried once.
Stella is on assignment this week, so we'll miss her. And I'll be honest, it has been such a crazy busy week. We have a big convention in my own backyard, not yours anymore, Destin. My own backyard here in San Francisco. The Game Developers Conference is here, and I have been down there every single day, pretty much all day, just doing various meetings, seeing games, meeting developers, which is great. I love it, but I did not have a free second to try and find a third, let alone a fourth chair for Unlock this week. So you're stuck with me and Destin. That's how it's going to go this week. But Destin, first up, and we should remind everybody that big new release this week, Dragon's Dogma 2. 8 out of 10 on IGN. I know you talked a bit about it, I guess, two shows ago, the last one that I was on, since I was traveling on business last week. And short version is you super love it. And are you going to be diving into the full version here?
Well, I've had a review code, so I can talk about it now a little bit. I have been playing. I haven't played a ton, but already that gameplay loop of exploring, finding like random side quests and such, it's there from the get-go. I think I'm already like level 7 on my main pawn, and then I got access to the big boy sword. So right away I switched vocations over to that, and that's sort of where I left off. I'm really, really stoked to dive back into this game. It is so fun, and there's like these crazy moments already happening online on Twitter where like there's a gap in between a ravine and you can't really cross it without going around. And there's an ogre on the other side. The ogre tips, falls over, catches it, and you use the ogre as a bridge to get to the other side. And like somebody posted that clip online, and it's so cool. And it really illustrates why Dragon's Dogma is special and has these really, really just naturally engaging gameplay moments. Like if you're being attacked, you can just lure everybody back to the town and the town will help you kill everybody, but you might lose valuable NPCs in the process. So it's cool, man.
Yeah, it just sounds like a very, for lack of a better term, from and this is just from watching your video preview and hearing you talk about it, like it sounds like a very organic RPG, if that makes sense. Like it's not, its systems aren't so rigid where, you know, you can only engage the monsters in the caves, you know, in the dungeons. Like it sounds like it is. It's a very like organic experience where that example you gave is a great example where like you can't do that in every RPG where you can just lure a big monster back to town to have the whole town take it on. So that's pretty cool, man. I think that game's going to do well. It's been killing on IGN. Like, the IGN audience is super interested in it. And now we'll see how that translates to the game actually being out. But if Miranda were here, she would plug our wiki, our Dragon's Dogma 2 game guide. So I definitely want to mention that because we've got multiple people full time playing and Dragon's Dogma 2 to get that wiki filled out. So if you need help anywhere in the game, come on over to IGN, and Miranda and her team have got your back on that.
That's a really great way to put it. You said earlier it feels really organic, and part of that is there's no loading. It's just seamless transitions into towns. Like when you go into a town, it's not like a loading screen. There's no loading screen when you open doors, and that really keeps you immersed in whatever you happen to be doing. There's also purposeful missions that make you walk from point A to point B. There's not really a fast travel system. You can use an ox cart, but like that's the closest thing they have to fast travel. Otherwise, you can use these very expensive and rare stones to fast travel. And I really, really like it. The best part, though, the pawn system. I have some really, really great pawns that I found in early game. One was named Daenerys Targaryen, like Daenerys, and it was a mage. And I've used it since the beginning. I swear to you, it sounds like Daenerys, and it trips me out every time. She's like, oh, there's a thing over there. And it's really, really cool. So I'm having a blast with it. Somebody made a Guts from Berserk pawn that I wanted to get in my party, but I haven't been able to find it yet. So there's just so many cool things, and Capcom did a really good job with this one. I'm stoked to get back to playing.
And you can check out the review, of course, on IGN.com, or watch the video version on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/IGN. So yeah, I mean, this is probably the biggest release of the year so far, I guess. That's probably fair to say, right? Other than, I mean, Pal World blew up, right? That's Xbox's mega hit to start the year. I don't want to discount that at all. But
I think Helldivers and Pal World might be the two biggest games of the year so far in terms of, like, on everything. This is probably the biggest release of the year
from a
AAA publisher.
Right, and I should have caveated that because I was, you know, thinking solely Xbox, and sadly Helldivers 2 is not on Xbox. But yeah, it's been a pretty good start to the year, and you just go back even to December, and Baldur's Gate 3 came to Xbox finally. So we're kind of quietly on a good stretch right now, and we're gonna talk about in just a second with the next wave of Game Pass games, like Lightyear Frontier just launched too, and our previewer super like that. It's in game preview, but you can play it right now on Game Pass. And continuing the now awesome annual tradition, MLB The Show launching directly into Game Pass. That's out now too on your Xbox. So
I'm not a baseball guy, but even I checked out one of the MLB games, and it's great that it's on Game Pass. That's why Game Pass is awesome, because if you're in a slower period in terms of releases, not this week, but if you are, or like you don't have the cash to get like the big game for your subscription fee, you get access to a lot of awesome games like MLB The Show, and it's like the best baseball game. I think it's the only one, though.
Well, but yes. Sadly, it is the only one, but thankfully,
it's good.
It's been amazing year in and year out. It's just a fantastic baseball sim. Sony San Diego coming to your Xbox today on Game Pass.
And there was that other game coming to Game Pass soon. What was it?
A little game with where there's like a devil in it or something. Is that the one you're talking about?
I can't remember. Yeah.
I guess, well, I wanted to bring up Halo Season 2, but we're talking Game Pass, so we'll just do that right now. The next wave of Game Pass games, the sort of wave 2 for March and then a little into April, has been announced basically for the rest of the month. Here's what's coming up. And we talked about this like 2 weeks ago. The first wave, like March, has been I would argue, like I said last time, maybe the best wave ever last time, in my humble opinion. And now combining it with the wave 2 games we're about to talk about, I would call this the best overall month for Game Pass ever. There's not like a Starfield in here in terms of mega blockbuster games, but there is, I guess, Diablo 4, but
Diablo
that game's been out.
Big.
It's been out for 8-9 months now.
Yeah.
Day one mega blockbuster.
Got it.
You gotta throw so many caveats on. That's what I'm saying. This has been probably the best month ever. So we talked about Lightyear Frontier, which is a chill farming sim, but you're in a giant mech, which, again, watch the video preview. And I think actually we have a review now, an early access slash game preview review on IGN now, if you want to go check that out. So that's a nice, super chill game. We talked about MLB The Show 24. The Quarry, if you are into, if you want to play like a sort of semi-spooky teen drama, like, you know, I Know What You Did Last Summer, but in video game form. It's from the developers of Until Dawn, if you played that on the PlayStation. So that's, you know, it's sort of a spiritual follow-up to that. Evil West, which was, as I remember, pretty decent. Yeah. That is tomorrow. Well, today is this episode releases, March 21st. We're recording on the 20th. You're hearing this on the 21st or later. Terra Invicta, another game preview game. That's PC only. So that's going to be on March 26th. And then moving out a little bit to the 28th of March, we have Hot Wheels Unleashed 2, which reviewed really well on IGN. Our resident racing game aficionado slash expert, Luke Riley, gave it, I think he gave that an 8, if memory serves. So that one had turned out really well. Open Roads, if I remember right, that's an adventure game, cloud console, PC. So that's all any and all Game Pass devices there. Also March 28th. Destin Ark Survival Ascended, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which there were some false starts on the release dates to this, but for Xbox.
Yeah.
But it's out. It's on cloud PC and Series X and S. And remind me, Destin, it's an Unreal Engine 5 remake of Survival Evolved. Do I have that correct?
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure you can't buy the base Survival Evolved. Don't quote me on that, internet, please. But like, I'm pretty sure there was some hubbub about the servers or something. But like, people were a little unhappy about how this was handled. But having not played the originals or anything and only playing this one, I had a good time with it. I played on PC when it came to PC. And, you know, you hunt dinosaurs, then it's a crafting survival game. So yeah. You start out, you build out your mud hovel or your thing out of twigs, which is what I built, and then you hunt the dinosaurs and you get cool armor, and then you sort of rinse and repeat that formula. And yeah, it's as good as any other crafting RPG that I played, and especially with cheat codes, it gets really good.
I mean, I remember
like the cool spacesuits.
I remember when this was first launching into, well, when Survival Evolved, not this, when the original version of the game was first launching into Xbox Game Preview. It was a long time ago now. I don't have the date in front of me, but I remember one of the developers coming in, and we did a Let's Play I'm in it. It's on the YouTube somewhere. It's on IGN somewhere. And I just remember like the game, the ideas of the game were really cool, but it was so rough and so early back then at the beginning of its game preview slash early access life. And now you've got a fully finished Unreal Engine 5 remake of the game. So if the idea of Ark Survival Evolved appealed to you, but you never played it for whatever reason, well, this is the best iteration of it, and it's right there in your Game Pass sub. So grab it and enjoy that on April 1st. No, it's not a joke. It's just that's the real date, April 1st, even though it's April Fool's Day. F1 23 is cloud only, so that's just streaming from the cloud. That's through EA Play on April 2nd, which of course is folded into your Game Pass sub. And then Super Hot Mind Control Delete Cloud Console PC April 2nd.
Well, as a racing game fan, I'm tempted to try out F1 23. I still got Forza installed, and my favorite multiplayer event they did was the sort of, I think it was F1 stuff. Anyway, it was the fast cars that look like that. I don't know all the different types of cars, but I'm very interested to check out F1 because I've heard, I hope this is the one that was good, because
is Codemasters, which, you know, EA bought, so it's under the EA label. But yeah, it's, you know, Codemasters does good stuff on the racing front.
Yeah, so kind of interested in checking that out a little bit more. Excited also to see the next game you're going to talk about.
Yeah, Diablo 4. That's the last one. That's the biggest thing on the list here in terms of just name recognition and big blockbuster game status. Mm-hmm. This Diablo 4, as everybody that's listened to this podcast for any length of time knows, was was my game of the year for most of last year after it came out. I'm such a Diablo fan, and I think 4 is the best Diablo, with the possible exception of Diablo 2.
2 is the best one.
Yeah, I mean...
You're incorrect. Sorry, Ryan.
I didn't say definitively.
Okay.
Because I'm with you. I mean, Diablo 2 has always been in my personal top 10, maybe even top 5 games of all time list, just my own personal list, and
Resurrected,
4 is really good.
Resurrected also had a bumpy start, but it is a very, very good Diablo remake. So if you haven't played 2, play Diablo 2 Resurrected.
Agreed. Yeah, super worth. I mean, hopefully we get that in Game Pass at some point as Microsoft continues to integrate all of the Activision Blizzard King stuff into the portfolio proper. But for now, yeah, you have to. That is just a regular game you pay money for outside of a subscription. But Diablo 4. So console and PC for your Game Pass sub, and so that's coming on March 28th, which is 1 week from when this podcast publishes. And how much time did you end up putting a lot of time into the final version, Destin?
Well, so my journey with Diablo started very positive. Like, it started out with that the first season initial, I was running Sorcerer, and I was like wrecking shop, figuring out my build and everything. I was doing Arclash at the time, I believe was the build. And I had played Diablo Immortal before that. I was like, I had played Diablo 2 Resurrected, and I was like really excited for this release. So season one hits, and the only problem that I encounter with Diablo is that first patch really, really soured community sentiment around the game. And then they just never really bounced back from it. Like, season two was kind of good, then the next season wasn't. And I'm hoping they figure out their stride with this game, because it has been struggling since then. All of that said, the fact that it's on Game Pass, like, you have like 100 hours worth of game time
easily
before you start hitting any sort of the challenges that I think the high level gamers end up facing. Maybe 100 is being generous, but like 30 hours. I put in a lot of time. I put in a lot of time in Diablo, grinding out my characters to level, and it's still a really, really fun game. There's a lot of improvements that I hope that the team can make, and they can come back. Like, you know, Adam over there plays the game, Rod plays the game, and I'm not sure quite what is missing in the end game for the community, but it hasn't managed to retain that end game. But I hope that doesn't turn people off from giving it a shot on Game Pass, because there is a lot of fun to be had, especially in that early ramp up to 50. I think it's 50 and up when you start kind of hitting that wall.
And that's, I think, worth emphasizing, is like your point is well taken. The community is continuing to kind of give a lot of feedback to Blizzard, but even if you only, and I'm using heavy air quotes here for our audio only listeners.
Yeah.
Oh, even if you only just play the campaign, which will take you roughly to level 50 or so, it's you're looking at a good 30 to 40 hours of just, in my experience, game of the year caliber gameplay for that campaign run. I adore this game so much, and it's awesome that it's on Game Pass now. I can't imagine this won't bring in a ton of new players that just didn't pick it up last summer or last fall for whatever reason. So, it's awesome that this is in Game Pass.
Yeah, Diablo is always going to hold a special place in my heart, especially Immortal, even with its controversy with the microtransactions. And 4, why? Because they turned me on to the ARPG genre. So now I'm playing Last Epoch. I'm playing Path of Exile 1. I'm about to do a preview for Path of Exile 2. And it's just a genre where you get really into the minutiae of movement with your characters and how all of that plays out and the pros and cons of all the different ARPGs that are out there on the market. And it is just so fun building up your character in these games and then taking on a tough boss and figuring out a cool build that just melts them to the ground. And whatever happened with Diablo 4 happened, and I am happy that it just really opened my eyes to how great this genre can be.
And yeah, I mean, you mentioned, you know, like our friend Rod Ferguson, the unknown, his whole reputation in the industry is as a fixer who gets things done, gets them shipped, and they're good things, usually, with his resume. You know, he's he's overseeing the entire Diablo franchise, and so it's this is the long tail looks very promising on Diablo. But like I said, you can enjoy the heck out of it without even worrying about the long tail of the game if you want to. But yeah, I'm right there with you. I've always loved Diablo, and a recent one for me was, which I think I talked about when I was last here 2 weeks ago, was No Rest for the Wicked. That's another promising one coming up from the developers of Ori, their new action RPG coming up. So that's not, I don't think that's going into Game Pass, but it's coming up. So if you need another action RPG to to get hooked on, Destin, that one's coming up.
Yeah, and you have Super Hot on the list. That looks really good. Yeah, this game, what was this called again?
This is No Rest for the Wicked.
Yeah, this one's also really cool. Man, there's a lot of good games right now. And it's just so refreshing to see so many options out there for gamers. And it's a little hard. I think once I get my work stuff done, the next games I'm going to be focusing on are, I'm going to be playing more Path 1. And I'm going to be playing a lot of Dragon's Dogma once I can get back to it. And then, you know, whatever the hype thing is from Xbox. Because, like, we still have all these games coming this year from Xbox. Like, I think Stalker 2 is still slated for late this year, right?
Yeah, September.
And we still have Avowed slated for this year, which I'm curious about. Indiana Jones, of course.
And then, of course, Hellblade in May.
Yeah, Hellblade in May. Like, Xbox just has a killer slate this year. So I'm very, very excited for all the gaming goodness that we're all going to be able to play in 2024.
Indeed. Well said. Let's do a Halo block here. I've got a Halo 2 story, a Halo Infinite story. And let's just start, Destin, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
Have you been watching the Halo TV show at all in season 2?
What episode is the last one that aired? Because I think I'm caught up.
7. We're waiting for the finale now.
Okay. I haven't seen 7, but I've seen through 6.
Okay. And what do you think of it so far?
I think it's much, much better than the original season. I kind of am glad they didn't continue on the story too much. Like, I just kind of pretend season 1 doesn't exist because I was very sour on it. Coming back, I think the plot explanation of why they couldn't have the armor on Reach and stuff like that actually kind of does a good job of humanizing the Spartans in a way that I didn't expect. And the villains are also humanized and sort of vilified in an interesting way with his father relationship. And just seeing how everybody reacts to this idea of this is it, this is the end. So what are you going to do? And seeing Master Chief step up, it does give you a lot of hope that the writers are starting to understand what the audience wants to see from this. I've seen a lot of positive sentiment online for where season 2 went. Some people aren't super happy that he wasn't wearing the armor or whatever, but I'm it gave them a chance to develop the character a little bit more and allow you to identify with that character. Did he need to be out of armor? I also agree that wasn't necessary because, you know, Master Chief in the games is always
never takes it off. Yeah.
You don't need to take it off to have an impact. You don't need to have mask off to have an impact in terms of storytelling. But I do like how they've handled season 2. It's drastically better than season 1 in terms of storytelling, and I'm excited to see the conclusion and where it's leading.
Yeah, I agree. It's really been quite a lot better. And if you're sitting here listening to us going, well, okay, I'll give it a try. Do I need to watch season 1?
Don't.
There'll be a couple things you'd be like, why is there a human woman hanging out with the Covenant? Like that piece of it will just seem weird to you. But if you kind of just let that go and just accept that there's this human woman that's in league with the Covenant for some reason.
Yeah.
Then, you probably can skip season 1. And just pick up with season 2. And it's been really good. And this, I'm not going to spoil it for anybody that hasn't been watching the season, but the finale here, which airs, tonight as we release this, Thursday is when Halo episodes drop.
I'm going to get caught up.
We're finally seemingly about to get a big moment that we've all been waiting 2 seasons for. So I'm curious to see they've kind of been teasing it a little bit, and I'm curious how it will actually be handled and whether or not it's going to do what I think it's going to do, which, again, I'll have to wait to talk about so we can kind of get into full spoilers. But it has been a lot better, and I've been enjoying it this season. So for what that might be worth, if you gave up on it in season one, hey, I get it. There's a million things to watch. But if you're still kind of curious about it, season two is pretty good. Continuing our Halo block, we'll go in reverse order from newest Halo things to oldest Halo, new Halo to old Halo. So Halo Infinite, there is a new wave of map. There's a bunch, 8 maps that just got dropped into Halo Infinite. So if you haven't logged in a bit, there you've got a bunch of new stuff all for squad battle. You've got maps called Refuge, Gyre, Harvest, Timberland Evolved, hello, Perdition, Rendezvous, and more are coming to the 8v8 blend of Classic Team Slayer and Big Team Battle that is squad battle. And that's 8 big maps, which makes me so happy because that's, you know, there haven't been, Big Team always had the fewest number of maps when Infinite launched. And if, like me, you were such a Halo diehard that you played Halo PC, Halo 1 PC, back when Gearbox made that back in the day, you'll know that that version had, I think it was 6? Oh, now I'm not quite remembering.
I don't know.
I want to say it was 6 exclusive new maps that were exclusive to Halo PC. They're in Master Chief Collection because MCC has everything. But one of those maps is Timberland, and that was always one of my favorites. That and Infinity were the two that I really loved from Halo PC. So this is obviously an update of Timberland, which is like a wooded, foresty, good CTF map. You know, not crazy huge, but kind of I would call it like a medium-sized Big Team map. So yeah, it's there's some good action going on in Halo Infinite.
You know, online, every once in a while, I still people saying, like, Halo Infinite was a miss or whatever. I'm just like, you're not paying attention to what that game is doing if you still think that. The campaign, look, even with everything that happened with the campaign, it's still like a 7 or an 8 out of 10.
I gave it a 9, and I stand by it.
Yeah, you gave it a 9. For me, it's like an 8. I also really enjoyed it. I think there's some storytelling stuff that was a little whatever, but, you know.
Yeah.
IGN's official stance. I don't want to argue with Ryan. IGN's official stance is a 9 out of 10.
What is this, the internet? Are you arguing with my review?
Yeah, multiplayer started out strong, but then they just didn't do anything with it. It has gone on to be awesome. Like, they have added tons of stuff to this, and you have to remember, multiplayer is free. You don't have to buy anything to play Halo Infinite multiplayer. So this is like free stuff that you can go in and play. I don't think they do a good enough job marketing the store because I can't find it half the time because I'm an idiot. And I'm probably representative of at least some percentage of the audience, but I don't buy stuff in stores anyway. But anyway, my point is, it's free. You don't have to buy anything. You get access to all these maps. You get access to all of the different modes that they have in this game, and it's a ton of fun. I mean, I've been playing since the first season, so I've seen the ups and downs of it when it was getting a little dry around, I want to say season 2 was probably the lowest point, and then
the end of season 1, right? People were kind of
It was sort of like, all right, like that's it. And then, you know, there were the layoffs at 343 and everything, and then they're just like knocking it out of the park with all of these additions that they've been adding lately. And it just seems like it keeps getting better every time they add a new thing. I haven't played since like season 5. I need to get back in. There have been so many additions to Halo Infinite multiplayer that I'm excited to get back in and get playing again. Just kudos to 343 for supporting this game. And you see people talking about it who are big Halo fans online and saying, hey, like, Halo Infinite's great. It is great. And if you're not playing, you definitely need to check it out if you're a Halo fan.
And I'm glad you kind of reminded everybody that it's free, because it's, I think, you know, I just take it for granted at this point because I reviewed the game. And but it's like, yeah, it's, if you only just got a Series X, not, you know, in the last year or so, just, you don't even need a game. It's not even a Game Pass thing. like you can get, if you have Game Pass, sure, you can play the campaign, but if you don't even, if you don't have Game Pass, Halo multiplayer is still free. It is completely free to play. So, and now there's a ton of stuff there. So enjoy that. This one is for my fellow olds who love Halo 2. This is such a cool story this past week. Halo 2's original Xbox Live multiplayer servers are coming back online thanks to a fan project. Those fans are behind the project Insignia, a free, unofficial, original Xbox Live replacement that is dedicated to reviving the online multiplayer component for the original Xbox console. The official Insignia social media account posted this week that it was launching a public beta to revive the Halo 2 servers. The public beta will include 10 multiplayer matchmaking playlists. They are kind of all the hits. Rumble Pit, Double Team, which is 2-on-2, Team Slayer, Team Skirmish, Team Training, Team Snipers, Team Hardcore, which of course is, you know, that's one of the favorite ones. SWAT, I always loved in all Halos. Big Team Battle, yes, and H2 Challenge. So the announcement goes, says our IGN write-up on this, even caught the eye of our friend Max Hoberman, the original lead designer of Halo 2, who said, for all aspiring time travelers, very cool. I'm curious how much functionality they'll be able to replicate. And then he said, he later added, if they can reach feature parity in places, I wonder if they might enhance or add features in line with my original design specs, .. So it sounds like Max is maybe open to, you know, helping out in some way, shape, or form on this, if it does indeed catch on and evolve. So, you know, yes, we have the Master Chief Collection, but that's not the actual original Halo 2 multiplayer. So this makes me so happy that fans have pulled this together and are doing this. And I don't have time this week with GDC, with this convention in my backyard, but sometime soon I gotta hop on there, because that'll be a straight like mainline hit of nostalgia just directly into my veins. And it's, we'll have to see cool. If I have any skills left. Probably not, because I was in my 20s when Halo 2 came out, and now I'm an old slow man in terms of FPS Twitch skills. This week's Podcast Unlocked is brought to you by NordVPN. Hey, if you're watching a lot of sports like me and you hate blackouts, NordVPN is a great way to go. You can use NordVPN, a virtual private network, to watch live sporting events, TV shows, films that aren't available in your region by switching your virtual location to a country that is showing that event. No more blackouts. It's also good for plenty of other stuff, like protecting your private data, your bank details, your passwords, your online identity. You can protect your data while you're traveling and using public Wi-Fi. NordVPN protects you wherever you are in the world. NordVPN threat protection also protects you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. NordVPN is also the fastest VPN in the world. No buffering or lagging while you're streaming, and it will stop your ISP bandwidth throttling. NordVPN is the price of a cup of coffee a month, so that is a super affordable, great way to go. To get the best discount off of your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/unlocked without the E. That's nordvpn.com/unlockd, and that'll give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. And best of all, there's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. nordvpn.com/unlocked without the E. If you're looking to save some money on your wireless plan, take a look at Visible Wireless. They're a transparent wireless carrier with nothing to hide. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, where you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. One line wireless, just $25 a month with taxes and fees included. That's unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Switch now at Visible.com. You shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. Like Visible, the wireless company making wireless visible.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
All right, Destin, let's talk about our headline story this week, BioWare. We love BioWare, you and I. I mean, you're the biggest Mass Effect fan I know.
Wearing the N7 shirt today.
Yeah, you came prepared, which I always appreciate. So it's interesting news related to BioWare here. Former PlayStation executive Connie Booth, who was one of the chief architects of PlayStation's first-party strategy, is joining EA to help lead its studios amid its ongoing restructure. Booth's title will be Group General Manager, Action RPG, with a portfolio that will include EA Motive, who's doing an Iron Man game right now, Cliffhanger, who's doing a Black Panther game right now, and BioWare. That's who we want to focus on, which, of course, we know they're working on Dragon Age Dreadwolf and Mass Effect 5. She will report directly to EA Entertainment head Laura Mealy. Quote, Connie spent more than 30 years helping to build Sony Interactive Entertainment's internal studios and is responsible for guiding the development of some of their biggest franchises, including Marvel's Spider-Man 1 and 2, The Last of Us, Ghosts of Tsushima, Uncharted, Ratchet and Clank, just to name a few, Mealy said in a statement released to IGN. She is known for having created an incredible developer-first culture and supporting creative vision while driving innovation. I've known Connie for many years and have always been impressed by her love and commitment to games. She especially cares about game developers. She has an impeccable reputation within the development community and will undoubtedly have a positive impact on our games, end quote. And a little bit more about Ms. Booth. She is a member of the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences Hall of Fame, having joined Sony in 1989 and worked especially closely with Naughty Dog. As director of product development, she is credited with helping to build the studio system that has carried PlayStation through roughly 30 years in the console market. Booth's hiring points to EA's desire to replicate some of PlayStation's current exclusives strategy, in which it has found success with large-scale single-player games such as God of War and Spider-Man. In initiating its current restructure, EA has said that it is prioritizing its own franchises and that one of its pillars is, quote, blockbuster storytelling, an area in which Booth has considerable experience. One of Booth's major tasks will be revitalizing BioWare, which is hoping that Dragon Age Dreadwolf will reverse its fortunes after Anthem and Mass Effect Andromeda. So, Destin.
Yeah.
We know where BioWare has been recently, with, on the downside, Anthem did not pan out, Mass Effect Andromeda was not well received, but Mass Effect Legendary Edition, the remake of the original trilogy, was super well received, and now we've been waiting a long, long time for Dragon Age Dreadwolf, and it's going to be an even longer wait for the new Mass Effect. So, what do you think about this? Like, do you feel more optimistic?
I'm incredibly optimistic about Connie Booth going over to EA. I think PlayStation is foolish for letting her go. I've heard nothing but positive things about her. The rumor is that when she was let go at PlayStation, her team went with her. That is dedication to a leader that you don't often see in the games industry. Connie Booth going over to EA is a huge, huge win for EA. And I am tremendously excited to see what Booth is able to accomplish over there. I think EA has had something problematic going on over there. Obviously, like, we don't know the details, but basically everyone's gone. Casey Hudson's gone. Mac Walters is gone. Mark Dara is gone. I think he's still doing consulting on Dragon Age. But it's been a tumultuous time for the company where they've mostly been talking about the problems that they've had at the studio, and very, very seldom are they talking about the successes. This is the first big win that I've seen from them in a long time. I'm happy to see it. And I, you know, they have teased Dragon Age Dreadwolf. They've teased some stuff for the next Mass Effect that have me pretty stoked. The Last Stand 7 Day, they did a bunch of little teasers that were really exciting. So I am very hopeful to see somebody of this caliber join EA, and maybe we can get back to that EA magic, that BioWare magic specifically, that we used to have from the company. And EA has some other really cool stuff in the works we're going to get to in the show.
Yeah.
So, like, it seems like they're finally figuring stuff out over there.
Yeah, I do want to – I got to throw in one thing, though, when you were talking about their first big win in a while. Mass Effect Legendary Edition was – even if you want to say, oh, it was only a remaster.
No.
They did a great job on that.
Absolutely, and I didn't mean that – I just mean after that came out, Mac Walters left, who I did the interview with when we did the exclusive look at the Mass Effect Legendary Edition, and I did the side by sides. Very proud of that.
Yeah, he was the project lead on Legendary Edition.
He was the project lead, and he's gone. Casey Hudson was let go, or whatever happened with Casey.
Well, he left.
I don't want to say anything. We don't know, but he announced his departure. And like all of these names that historically have been involved with these big projects that have seen success left. So in terms of win, I wasn't talking about game releases. You're right. Legendary Edition was phenomenal, and the marketing that they've done has been phenomenal. But internally, it's been largely reports of angst and strife. So that has been concerning to hear. Connie Booth coming in, I think, is going to be a boon for BioWare and EA in the larger scope of things.
Yeah, I take your point, and you're right. I think someone with her skills, her achievements, her reputation is, if nothing else, and I'm sure it's going to be much more than this, but it's probably a very steadying, reassuring, calming hire. Like it's a stabilizing force for, you're right, like
stabilizing force. I like that.
There was a Jason Schreier, you kind of referred to it, the Jason Schreier report from whatever that was a couple of years ago now, maybe, about, you know, pretty not great culture and workplace environment that was happening at BioWare. Mm-hmm. Which I think that was what led to, was that when Casey left, or there were departures sort of that came out of that. And yeah, it's, you're right that a lot of the people that kind of built BioWare's great reputation have moved on for what, you know, and we don't have the whole story of whether they were also part of things going south in terms of workplace culture and ultimately the results, the games themselves at BioWare or what, but the fact now is, It's a new class. It's a new generation of BioWare developers. Mm-hmm. And we've seen this work before where, you know, a new generation can come into a studio that has a decorated history and they can produce awesome stuff. I mean, everybody by now listening to this knows the example that I always point to first is id Software with Doom. You know, the Carmack, Romero, all those original Rockstar developers from id, they pretty much have all moved on, but then Hugo Martin and the new team came in and we have this new generation of Doom games now that have been so awesome and very much worthy of the Doom name. And that's what we're looking for now out of Dragon Age and Mass Effect, right? It is not going to be made, whether you like it or not, these games are not being made by the same people that made the original Dragon Age and Mass Effect games that we love. So the question is, can this new generation of them make something equally awesome for the 2020s? You know, because as you know, Destin, it's gamer expectations change, technology changes. Mm-hmm. Like if you went back and played Dragon Age 1, like Dragon Age Origins right now.
I have. It's hard to play.
Yeah, it's not because it's a bad game. It's just it was a game of its time and time moves along.
Yeah. Even like a game you like, the original Splinter Cell, same sort of thing. You go back, it's just like everything feels sort of clunky and obtuse.
That's true. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So having Connie Booth, who again knows she has helped build and helped lead successful teams for so long. It's to me, I mean, I'm not a developer, obviously. I'm not working at BioWare, but as a fan of BioWare's games, particularly Mass Effect, it is reassuring to me that, like, okay, she's gonna steer them down the right path. Now you still need talent, which, you know, this new generation, and I'm not saying this critically, but I think it's fair to say they haven't proven themselves yet, right? Because we haven't seen a game from them since the old guard walked out the door, right? So it remains to be seen. You need the talent, you need the time, you need the tools, and you need the leadership. And so hopefully all those things are coming into place now. They seem like they have the time, because Dragon Age Dreadwolf was announced years ago, and we're still only just going to get the gameplay reveal this summer. That was what we were promised whenever that last little update on the game was. So that means that game's probably not even out this year, if we're only getting the gameplay reveal this summer. If I were a betting man, I would say that this summer means that they're aiming to reveal it, to do that gameplay reveal at Jeff Keighley's Summer Game Fest, you know, showcase/livestream thing.
Mark isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
So like the footage we're seeing on the video, it's
to your point, right?
Yeah.
And then I don't Mass know if Effect, still there. Mass Effect is, we know it's even further, it's further behind Dragon Age. So who knows how long it's going to be before we see Mass Effect. But this is all very reassuring. And I've definitely, from what I hear, this has come as very welcome news inside of BioWare. Should hopefully make people feel good too. We want BioWare to get back to what they were. And to your larger point, Destin, about EA, like, we want to see EA get back. Like, EA used to be one of the most reliably awesome publishers. That they absolutely were. That I know they've in more recent years had this reputation of being terrible, and a lot of that was
work,
if you want to call it, well earned. They brought it on themselves with a lot of microtransaction-y stuff and the sort of their practices. But I do think it's fair to at least say EA seems to be trying to move in the right direction. It's just, it takes some time. They can't fix things with one game, one release. But we got Mass Effect Legendary Edition, and it was fantastic. It didn't have any hooks for any microtransaction nonsense in it. And we got the Dead Space remake, the same thing. That was just a great, great game, great remake, great single player only experience. So, you know, Dragon Age Dreadwolf should be the single player only RPG, and so should Mass Effect. So it seems like things are hopefully moving in the right direction that Connie will help make sure goes in and stays in the right direction, right?
It's a great hire.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
Period.
Speaking of
great,
some of the most talented, great hires and some of the most talented women in gaming, Amy Hennig, who, of course, built her reputation also at Sony at Naughty Dog. Go ahead, Destin, say it.
Legacy of Kain. Yes, she made Uncharted, whatever. Legacy of Kain. She was the lead writer on the Legacy of Kain franchise. I think somebody else worked on the first Blood Omen, Legacy of Kain Blood Omen, but like the game really caught on with Raziel and the intermingled relationship between those two characters. Huge fan of her work. I don't think anything that I've played that she has touched has been phenomenal. Like, everything she does is great, and I'm very excited to see this, especially after that footage we got today.
Yeah.
It looks so, so good.
Yeah, let me set it up real quick. At GDC this week, every GDC, Epic, who of course makes Unreal Engine and supports the tool set for developers that license that engine, they do a State of Unreal briefing, like a live stream where they show off the new tech that they're working on. Going back many years, the original test, what kind of was the test footage for Gears of War, was in that. That's how long they've been doing State of Unreal. There was a, you may remember the Meat Cube, which was like a little, it's like a tech demo for, I think for Gears 2.
Gears. It was Gears, yeah.
Yeah, was that was from State of Unreal. Anyway, at State of Unreal today, as we record, so this week at GDC, Amy Hennig's Marvel game was officially announced. We knew a few details about it from last year, but we know it's called Marvel 1943 Rise of Hydra, set during World War II, which that piece we already knew.
Great and, premise. What a great premise.
And it's going to be two different stories, Captain America and Black Panther. And we got a first trailer, which if you're watching us on video, we've got running for you right now.
It looks like a movie.
It is insane looking. It's wielding all of Unreal Engine 5's tricks, like nanite and what is it, Lumen? I think is the
nanite,
two sort
Lumen
of,
metahumans. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what, Destin? Please take it away here. I've been talking a lot, and I can tell you're just eager to talk about this.
Well, I mean, really, at the end of the day, the technology is really, really cool. They showed off, I just caught glimpse of it, but they were showing, like, here's how we've changed dirt in the game, and here's how we changed snow. But then they showed this trailer, and utilizing the technology that Unreal has been working on for years, I am absolutely blown away by this gameplay tease that we have. And at first you're like, oh, you know, we all think of Cap from the movies, but when you see it all in action and play out in this trailer, it works so, so well. And the actors are really knocking it out of the park. I don't know these actors. I haven't heard of them before, but I'm like really invested in their intermingled relationships and how it's all going to play out. Obviously it's T'Challa with his goals and Cap with his goals, and they're superheroes, so they got to punch each other a few times before they work it out and work together. But it is nice to see this sort of clash of ideals in this particular setting, because, you know, 1943, obviously World War is going on with the Nazis, and the idea that we're going to get to explore how Hydra came to be, I think it's like, if Amy is working on that, I am so stoked to see the journey that we're going to be taking on, because obviously you can go a lot of directions with that. And the technology is mind blowing. Yeah. It does look like, now a lot of people are like, oh yeah, it's cutscenes. Cutscenes are easy. I don't think it's all cutscenes. I think there are brief snippets of gameplay in there, but
oh yeah, this is what it looks like. I mean, it looks incredible. And that's when I'll be honest, when I first heard that Amy was doing a Marvel game and a Star Wars game, by the way, so think about how crazy that's going to look, because you know it's going to run on the same tech, that she was doing. She'd
by
signed
Frostbite.
On with, yeah, she'd signed on with Skydance. That's the publisher that's doing this. And Skydance has made some video games, but they're, if you look at their roster, it's nothing that we would probably consider AAA in terms of production value. And so that was kind of where my expectations were. I was like, oh, Amy's going to do this Captain America Black Panther game set in World War II for Skydance. It's going to no doubt have awesome writing, great characters, because it's an Amy Hennig game, but it's probably going to be like, you know, a AA. Like, it's not going to be Uncharted in the production value category. And then I saw this today with Unreal Engine 5.4, and it's like, oh no, this is going to be an absolute visually stunning knockout.
Like that looks
of a
like
game.
That looks like gameplay when he throws the shield and stuff. And
so this is going to be awesome. And again, like the she's got a Star Wars project too. That's probably going to just look. You know, it's surely going to leverage all the same tech, because it's not like she's building her team's building a whole separate engine and tech pipeline for the start. So it's like, no, it's going to use the same stuff. So her Star Wars game is going to look insane as well.
This is next year, by the way.
2025. You're right.
Like, so this is the first leap I've seen. Like, if this is actually what we're going to get, this is one of those leaps. Like, I think Hellblade 2 is a notable entry in terms of graphic quality. And then this, it just blows anything I've seen out of the water. It looks so, so good. We'll see what happens in 2025, but I'm excited.
Yes. All right. And that, we've got to go here because I've got to go back to GDC for more meetings. So, Destin, thank you so much. Great show today. Always fun to talk video games with you. We'll hopefully get Stella back in here next week. I want to thank Jobert, our producer today. I'm Ryan McCaffrey. This was Podcast Unlocked, episode 637. We shall see you next week.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.